right, thanks so much for having me, and thanks so much for organizing this. It's great to see so many people out here in Berkeley. I'm from Friends of the Earth. We are the world's largest network of environmental organizations, and we're in over 70 countries, and that's important because the global climate negotiations are as much about equity as they are actually about averting the most catastrophic impacts of climate change. And my remarks in the next 10 quick minutes are going to focus on a couple of things. First, I mean, what are the stakes that are involved in this negotiation? Second, how we sort of got to Cancun? And third, what came out of Cancun and where we're headed? So, the stakes, you know, what are we talking about here? What we're really talking about here is the world's largest distribution of resources in modern history, right? Carbon is the world's last great global commons. And we have a limited carbon budget left if we are to avert catastrophic climate change. So the question is, how do we divide up the atmospheric space or the remaining carbon budget in a way that is fair to everyone? Now, the U.S. and other developed countries have actually grown rich by using cheap, dirty, and carbon-intensive energy sources and have used more than our fair share of carbon space, if you will. And so really, this is what we're talking about here. These are the stakes, and this is why these negotiations are so important. The U.S. has actually, up to now, used this convention to try to secure atmospheric resources that should be made available to the whole world if we are concerned about equity here. And I'll describe, the U.S. has also been using considerable economic and political pressure to get what it wants at the expense of the poor. And so, you know, here in Berkeley, we can really understand, for example, how this kind of behavior is really a repeat of very colonialist practices, right? Where you have wealthy countries identifying the resources they want in the world and then developing policies and benefits that benefit them at the expense of others. So we're really not talking just about a climate treaty. We're talking about a convention that has deep development and equity implications. So those are the stakes. Second question, how did we get to Cancun? Well, in order to answer that question, we should really kind of rewind back about 3 years ago to 2007. In Bali, which was a really critical conference for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, at that conference of parties, the negotiators produced what was called the Bali Compromise, or the Bali Roadmap. And it had three really critical components. The first was that it established a second commitment period for the Kyoto Protocol. Right? So the Kyoto Protocol is the only legally binding international instrument to address climate change. And it sets aggregate global and binding emissions reductions targets, which are shared by the wealthy world, right? The part of the world that is most responsible for creating the climate problem in the first place. Now, as we all know, the U.S. is not a signatory to the Kyoto Protocol, but the Kyoto Protocol is extremely important. It is the world's only legally binding instrument for reducing climate. So the second outcome in Bali was what was called the Bali Compromise, right? The U.S. didn't join the Kyoto Protocol at the time, and this is, you know, back in the Bush days, but we did agree to make emissions reductions that were comparable to what the rest of the wealthy world was promising, right? So all the wealthy world countries in the world would agree to make greenhouse gas reductions either under the Kyoto Protocol or under a kind of a separate agreement called the Long-Term Cooperative Action Plan, or the LCA track, that was specifically agreed to in order to get the U.S. on board. So that came out of Bali, too. The third thing that came out of Bali is that there was a reaffirmation that developing countries who did very little to cause the climate crisis but would be subject to some of the worst and most severe impacts of climate change would get new technology and financial resources to articulate a less carbon-intensive development path as they grew and to adapt to the impacts of climate change. So Bali provided this roadmap to Copenhagen, which were the big climate negotiations that a lot of us heard about a year ago. So what happened in Copenhagen? Well, as we probably all know here, in Copenhagen, a very small group of countries in a very untransparent process wrote a position that essentially favored the US. And a key to this was what's called a pledge and review approach. It's where countries submit their greenhouse gas reduction pledges that they were willing to do domestically, regardless of whether or not those individual pledges actually added up to the global greenhouse gas emissions that scientists say that we need to avert catastrophic climate change, right? So there was this pledge and review system. Everybody would just turn in their voluntary pledges. And the UN actually did the math and added up what would be the emissions reductions if this Copenhagen Accord actually came to fruition. The result was that we would be on a path to a catastrophic 4 or almost 5 degrees Celsius warming, right? And that would be devastating. 2 degrees warming is sort of what everybody has sort of agreed to before is the target. And the Copenhagen Accord would set us on the path to much, much more with really devastating impacts on the poor, especially around the world. So, coming out of Copenhagen in this whole last year of 2010, we saw a couple of very disturbing trends that were unfolding. The first is that there were real significant questionings and concerns about the appropriateness of the UN itself as a forum to address climate change. And this created a lot of concern for poor countries around the world because the UN really is the only venue which provides poor countries with an equal voice in these negotiations. So we've seen a significant assault against the UN over the last year. And then along with that, a deliberate lowering of expectations of what would come out of Cancun last month, right? And this, of course, is in the same year that we saw all of these climate catastrophes from from floods in Pakistan to forest fires in Russia. So that was one thing that we saw play out over last year in the lead up to Cancun. The second thing is that we saw how wealthy countries actually used development assistance, foreign aid, and promised climate finance to coerce countries to sign up to this Copenhagen Accord, right, which was based off of this pledge and review system. So climate finance, this is the money that the wealthy countries owe to poor countries under the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. The US actually denied climate finance, for example, to Bolivia and Ecuador for not signing up to the Copenhagen Accord. And this really just amounts to bullying and bribery, honestly. One of the amusing things which came out of the Cancun talks was that the Ministry of Finance in Ecuador actually said that he would pay the U.S. $3 million if we would come up and sign the Kyoto Protocol. That was the irony was not lost on anyone, although it was not really picked up very well in the press. During that time also as well, during the negotiations, some of you may have read in The Guardian a really interesting article based off of the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables coming out of the U.S., which really exposed the extent to which the U.S. and other countries were trying to bully developing countries to sign up to the Copenhagen Accords by using climate finance and development assistance as their leverage. So that was a context coming into Cancun last month. And as a lot of you know, just by reading the papers, in Cancun, negotiators fell far, far short of what was needed in terms of a fair, ambitious, and binding climate deal. There were no additional emissions reductions that were taken on. The Cancun Agreement actually enshrines this pledge and review approach that was tabled in Copenhagen that provides no collective assessment on whether or not the collective pledges will do enough to avert dangerous climate change. And the Copenhagen agreements also put a nail in the coffin of the Kyoto Protocol itself. And some people will say, oh, this is the first nail in the coffin, or it's the second to last nail in the coffin, or some people will say, oh, well, Kyoto Protocol is dead and a walking zombie anyway. But anyway, the upshot really here is that the trend is dire. and the what's called the international climate architecture, how we will all collectively, you know, as a world, decide to tackle this pressing, you know, most important environmental issue of our time, that whole architecture is under assault. And so the outcome, which was so beneficial to wealthy countries like the US, which don't want to actually make emissions reduction targets that bite and mean something, this outcome, which was so beneficial to us and so detrimental to others, especially those in the global south, would have been, I think, a lot more difficult if the negotiations had been conducted truly in an open and transparent manner that is typical of the UN. And by typical of the UN, I mean that the UN process typically provides equal voice to countries, both poor and rich. And as opposed to, for example, in the World Trade Organization, where they use these exclusive small room processes in which a select group of countries negotiate at the expense of others. Unfortunately, the government of Mexico, which is the president and sort of the shepherd of this these climate talks in Cancun, sort of won the PR game. They kept saying that they were pursuing an open and transparent process, but it really didn't happen. For example, Saturday in the middle of the talks, they had said, oh, it's open and transparent. And then 3 hours later, you had the government of Mexico sending out an email to, you know, 40 countries to help negotiate a text at the same time, you know, you've got something like 192 countries that are actually a conference to the parties. So that happened constantly. In fact, several developing country negotiators actually said that the process in Cancun was even worse than in Copenhagen. I mean, that was partly because of the pressure that everyone was working under, and that also drove the, you know, the agenda there, which was the conventional wisdom, which went something like this. If Cancun does not deliver, then the entire UN process, right, would have been called into question, and that would be really damaging for poor countries who need the equal footing within the UN. But you know, even in this supposedly very kind of democratic UN process, you know, the US, our government, had an extremely, like, all or nothing approach, where the US government wouldn't agree to do anything unless they got everything that it wanted. And we did get pretty much everything we wanted. Developing countries actually got nothing in terms of, you know, additional climate reductions from wealthy countries, and they didn't get any new money put on the table for climate finance, and nor did they get some of the most important things they wanted in terms of technology transfer. They got institutions, though. They got a, you know, financing mechanism. They got a technology mechanism. They got an adaptation mechanism, but all of these don't have any money behind them. So none of these mechanisms stand a chance if we don't adopt really aggressive greenhouse gas reduction targets here in the US and in other wealthy countries. So where are we heading next? Well, the next conference of parties, the big next big UN talks are in Durban. And that is where we really need the climate finance to be put on the table. We need real money. We need the real reductions. We need aggregate binding, what's called top-down reductions, rather that add up to something meaningful to avert climate disaster rather than this pledge and review system. And we need dramatic change from the US and other countries in order for this to happen. The risk is that heading towards Durban and then the quote-unquote Rio Plus 20 summit that's going to be happening in 2012, that there'll be a new convention written that obliterates some of the most important parts of the UN Framework Convention, the parts that really speak to equity. And so we have a lot of work ahead of us. And it's work that the fellow panelists will be going into in more detail. Thank you.